Okay. Let's talk about the physical activity guidelines for Americans that just came out a couple weeks ago. Before I start, I'd really like to thank my co-authors, Rick Troiano, who's really the coordinator for the physical activity guidelines effort, and also David Buckner, who chaired the writing group. Okay, I have no relationships to disclose. And here's an overview of today's session. We're going to start out with introducing the guidelines. And then Suzanne will talk a little bit about the formative research that's been done really around communication about physical activity to the public. And then Kay is going to talk specifically about the translation efforts that have been happening for the guidelines specifically. And then Genevieve will finish the session out talking about dissemination efforts around the guidelines, specifically talking about partnerships. All right, two objectives for this talk today. One, to describe the processes we use to develop the guidelines, 2008 Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans. And also, at the end of the session, you should be able to list the guidelines for youth, adults, and for older adults. All right, so the Physical Activity Guidelines are pretty much a landmark document that just came out a couple weeks ago. This is really the first time that the federal government has published comprehensive physical activity guidelines. In this year, just a couple weeks ago. All right, so let me give you a little overview or feel for how these guidelines were developed. They began with a proposal to Health and Human Services, and that turned out to be, was really an Institute of Medicine workshop, where the purpose of that workshop was to look at the adequacy of the evidence to develop physical activity guidelines. So that document came out, that product came out, which basically said that yes, there was enough evidence to move forward and to start to develop physical activity guidelines for the country. Secretary Leavitt then announced the idea to develop the guidelines further, and a leadership team at HHS was formed that consisted of these organizations. Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion, the President's Council for Physical Fitness and Sports, as well as CDC. Before the guidelines, the scientific process of the guidelines formally got started, at CDC we started to work on a systematic evidence review by reviewing over 1,700 scientific articles on the relationship between physical activity and chronic disease health outcomes. All right. Then, the Physical Activity Guidelines Committee, a federal advisory committee, was appointed in January of 2007. And in May of this year, about a year and a half later, they produced a pretty substantial report. So all the evidence on physical activity and health is contained within the 650-page plus page document. It's actually 683 pages. But so don't print it out all in one fell swoop. There is this document out there that exists, but it is really written for a scientist audience. Okay? And this is the Federal Advisory Committee. These are the folks who developed the report. The committee was chaired by Bill Haskell from Stanford, and vice chair was Min Nelson from Tufts. So they did really an excellent job in putting together the science behind physical activity and health. And that science really was the factor that we use to develop physical activity guidelines. So we took the science, the evidence-based report, and we translated it for practitioners. And that was done by a physical activity guidelines writing group. Okay? And that's what I'm going to talk to you today, these 2008 physical activity guidelines for Americans. Now, the rest of the panel is going to talk about how we take that information from a guidelines report that's really targeted to a health professional audience, and we think about translating and disseminating that information in a usable format. So, the majority of the presentation today is going to be about this dissemination and translation, and I'm going to talk about the green box, the actual guidelines. And it's really going to be a Cliff Notes version of the guidelines, because I only have 20 minutes. All right, so the first thing, if you want to think about it, you probably know some guidelines that are out there. They've been ongoing now for 30 years or so. There have been guidelines about physical activity. But this is really the first major science review in more than a decade. It provides guidance for children and adolescents, adults, pregnant and postpartum women, folks with disabilities and chronic conditions. And it also provides guidance for non-aerobic activities for muscles and bone strengthening, flexibility, as well as balance. There is a chapter that identifies health benefits and talks about the amounts that are necessary to get those benefits And then the last chapter really provides a bridge to health promotion. So it talks about ways to get active. Right? Okay, there's some things that, if you're used to looking at these types of guidelines, that may surprise you about these specific guidelines. One is they tend to be fairly flexible. There are more choices about frequency or days per week that you can do physical activity. There is information about using a different, either absolute intensity of activity or relative intensity of activity. I'm going to talk about that a little bit in just a second. Muscle strengthening activities are strongly endorsed, but they don't necessarily take on the typical features that you see in some strength training programs. So, for example, there's no requirement for non-consecutive days of the week. Flexibility activities, while they're acceptable, they're not a recommendation or a guideline. And there's a specific guideline to avoid inactivity. Okay, just a couple general concepts before we launch into the guidelines. One is about volume. Volume is that total amount of activity, and it's composed of three pieces. Frequency, the number of times you do it or the episodes you do it per week. Intensity, that level of effort per episode. And duration, the amount of time that it takes you to do activity per week. Now, volume is really more important than any one of those single components. And that's a real important concept for these guidelines. Volume is the most critical factor. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of intensity, aerobic intensity. It's been a common source of confusion in the past. You know, how hard do I have to work? And these concepts are kind of difficult to communicate to a public audience. But there's really two measures of intensity, absolute and relative intensity. And for these guidelines, a person can use either relative or absolute to determine if they're meeting the guidelines. And you're thinking, well, what's relative and what's absolute? Well, let's talk about that. Absolute intensity is basically based on the type of activity that you're doing. Okay? Activities are classified into either light, moderate, or vigorous intensity activity based on that energy expenditure. Right? For moderate activity, people rate the intensity activity in terms of a MET or a metabolic equivalent. One MET is basically the amount of energy that you're expending right now at rest. Okay? So if you do an activity that's a 5-MET level activity, you are expending 5 times the amount of energy than you would at rest. Right? So moderate activities for an absolute scale are range from 3 to 5.9 METs, where vigorous intensity activities are at least 6 METs or greater. So to determine the MET level of intensity for an activity, you look up that activity in a table. Okay? So basically, if you just think about absolute intensity a scale, it's really based on the type of activity that you're doing. All right, well, what about relative intensity? It's basically relative. It's relative to you and your fitness level. So relative intensity of a brisk walk, for example, depends on the fitness of you. If you're an elite athlete, it might be a light intensity activity. If you're a recreational walker, it might be moderate intensity activity. If you're a frail older adult, well, it might be nearly impossible for you to do that activity. So it is relative to your fitness level. There's two methods to assess relative intensity in the guidelines. There's a scale that you can use, 0 to 10, where 5 or 6 on that scale is considered moderate intensity activity, and 7 or 8 is considered vigorous intensity activity. There's also something you can use called a talk test. And so for moderate intensity activity, usually what you can do while you're doing the activity is you can talk, but you can't sing. And if it's vigorous intensity, you can't really say more than a few words while you're doing the activity. So that's just one perceptual way to think about gauging the intensity of an activity. All right, so with all that said, so what are the guidelines? All right, so for children and adolescents ages 6 to 17, the guidelines are to do 60 or more minutes of physical activity daily. And that 60 or more minutes should be composed of moderate to vigorous intensity activity, but it should include on at least 3 days of the week vigorous intensity activity. It should also on 3 days of the week include muscle strengthening activity and also bone strengthening activity on at least 3 days of the week. Those are the guidelines for children and adolescents. It's also important behaviorally to think about encouraging participation in physical activities that are age appropriate, enjoyable, and offer variety. So you can go online and you can read these guidelines. But what I want to give to you is a little bit of insight into the thinking behind developing the guideline. So for each of the guidelines, what I'm going to do is give you the guideline, and then I'm going to talk, I'm going to comment on the guideline, kind of an inside scoop. So for the children and adolescent guidelines, as opposed to adults, there's no choice on frequency. Kids have to be active every day, right? Unstructured play can also meet the guidelines. So depending how old you are, if you're 16, you're probably not going to be interested in running around playing tag, probably more interested in playing maybe a sport, be on a team, things like that. But it allows for the idea to do unstructured play like young children typically do. Okay. It also allows for some vigorous intensity activity on at least 3 days of the week. So that's because there's a lot of evidence that vigorous intensity activity is very related to improvements in cardiovascular fitness in children. And that's why the vigorous intensity activity recommendation is there. There's also insufficient data to recommend exact doses for vigorous intensity, strength training, or bone strengthening activity. There just aren't studies out there that tell you exactly how much kids need to do. And it's also going to be a challenge to track these specific recommendations for kids over time. We can do that pretty well right now in looking at just total time spent in moderate to vigorous activity and the systems, the surveillance systems that we have right now. But the other components, the 3 days a week component, are going to be challenging, and we have to figure out a way to do that. Some more comments. As children age, you know, they tend to do more structured activity, and so this guideline does allow for that as well. There's also this emphasis on variety, and that's because we want kids to think about doing activities where they build on their skills. They develop skills so that they can do different types of activity over the long haul into their adulthood. It also helps us try to reduce overuse injury so kids don't do the same activity over and over and over. And above all, it's very important for everyone, actually, that they have fun doing an activity because that means they'll keep doing it. The first chapter of the guidelines actually affirms the importance of physical activity for children younger than six, for preschool kids, but there's just basically not that much data out there. So that's why the recommendation only goes down to age six. And physical activity is recommended for children with disabilities. All right, so let's move on to adults. There are four key adult guidelines. One is to avoid inactivity, so don't do nothing. There is a guideline on doing, for substantial health benefits, do medium amounts of aerobic activity. For more health benefits, additional and more extensive health benefits, you're going to do high amounts of activity. And there's also a guideline about muscle strengthening activities. So let's walk through those. So here is the guidelines exactly worded. All adults should avoid inactivity. Some physical activity is better than none. And adults who participate in any amount of physical activity gain some health benefits. So don't be inactive. To get substantial health benefits, one should do at least 150 minutes, that's 2.5 hours a week, of moderate intensity aerobic activity, or 75 minutes, 1.25 hours a week of vigorous intensity aerobic activity, or an equivalent combination of the two. Those activities should be performed in episodes that last at least 10 minutes, and preferably they should be spread throughout the week. Some comments about this. There is a minimum intensity. So moderate intensity activity is the minimum intensity that one needs to do. So light intensity activity, that kind of strolling in the mall type of walking, that kind of intensity activity doesn't count toward the guideline. If they do moderate intensity activity, they have to do at least 150 minutes a week. And there is a minimum duration of the activity, so at least 10 minutes at a time for activities. So walking up the stairs, for example, wouldn't count unless you have a really, really tall building. But usually when you walk up five flights of stairs, that's usually 1 or 2 minutes. So those types of activities don't count toward the guidelines. All right. So there's a minimum frequency. There's not a minimum frequency to recommend. So the guidelines actually say preferably 3 days a week, but they don't specify. And that's because the data just aren't out there to really hit that number hard and to make a certain pronouncement. So if you do your 150 minutes, you can do 50 minutes on 3 days a week, or you can do 30 minutes on 5 days a week. As long as it adds up to 150 minutes, that's what counts. So it's still okay to do the 30 minutes per day times 5 per week, if that's what you prefer to do. But the committee felt that this was too specific. But it's still okay to do if that's what you like to do. So again, 3 days per week as a minimum frequency is suggested in the guideline, but it is not part specifically stated as a guideline. All right. Okay, here's the third guideline for adults. For additional, more extensive health benefits, adults should increase their aerobic activity to 300 minutes, 5 hours a week of moderate intensity activity, or 150 minutes a week of vigorous intensity activity, or an equivalent combination. And additional health benefits are gained by engaging in physical activity beyond this amount. All right, so the last guideline for adults is a muscle strengthening guideline, and that is that adults should do muscle strengthening activities that are moderate or high intensity and involve all major muscle groups on 2 or more days a week. These provide additional health benefits. All right. Comments on this muscle strengthening. It does require moderate to high level of intensity, relatively few repetitions. So every time you lift the weight or you move the exercise band or you do a sit-up or a push-up, you do it 8 to 12 times. And you can do that just one time, one set of 8 to 12. That's fine. It'll improve strength. You need to do it at least 2 days a week. There's, you know, it used to be kind of the mantra that you didn't weightlift every on consecutive days, but there's actually no evidence that that is non-beneficial. So the guideline does not say that you can't do that. There are major muscle groups that one would need to do muscle strengthening on, and those are listed here. There are 7 of them: legs, hips, back, chest, abdomen, shoulders, and arms. And all those muscle groups should be worked out twice a week. All right, so older adults, 65 plus, they're in addition to the four adult guidelines. So the adult guidelines that we just walked through pertain to older adults, but these are 4 additional guidelines for older adults. So there's some adults can't meet the 150 minutes a week. So is there particular suggestions for them? There's also a guideline about doing balance exercise for older adults who are at risk for falls. It's really important for older adults to use relative intensity. It's relative to their fitness to prescribe intensity for older adults because there's such a wide range in fitness for older adults. And for chronic conditions and injury risk, there's also a guideline. All right. So if you're an older adult, 65 and over, and you can't do 150 minutes a week, it's important to do something. So they should be as physically active as their abilities and conditions allow. And that's because, basically, a couple reasons. One is because that amount of activity really helps improve functionality, their ability to do activities of daily living. And also that this guideline and other guidelines for older adults really does, it applies to not only those who are 65 and older, but if folks with chronic health conditions can't achieve the 150 minutes, then it also applies to them as well. There's a balance exercise guidelines for folks who are at risk for falling. It's really important that they do these types of balance exercises. And the word exercises is there in the guidelines because these are the types of studies, these training studies, that's actually implemented exercise programs for older adults. And that there's balance training in the context of really preventing falls. So these have been pretty helpful for older adults. And for chronic conditions and injury risk, older adults who have chronic conditions should understand how their conditions affect their ability to do physical activity safely. All right. There are other chapters in the guidelines, and just didn't have time to go over them today, but these are all listed here. There's a chapter on health benefits, on safety, again, on additional considerations, and an important chapter about taking action. I just want to acknowledge all the people that worked on the physical activity guidelines for Americans. There were lots of folks who contributed a lot of time to this effort, and they're all listed here from many different different groups across HHS. We're all going to show a slide that looks something like this. This basically tells you where you can get information and list. I think the most important thing is the first bullet, and that's the website. This is how you can get the information on the guidelines. And everybody else is going to talk about specific products about the guidelines. Okay, so thanks a lot.
Is that everybody?
We're done. Thank you, Janet. And our next speaker is Suzanne Hurley, who will be speaking on You Want Me to Do What? Research for Physical Activity Guidelines Messaging.